Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 58 for October 15th, 2009. The buffer between you and silence. All right, it is time for the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, all that fun stuff. Tonight with me, as always, from the Mac Observer, is Mr. Jeff Gamet. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, as always, it's wonderful to be here.
Thanks for being here. Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
A little thrown off, and again, I apologize up front for sounding crappy to everybody, I guess.
It's Skype. The Skype gods are frowning upon us today.
Story of my week, I think.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy week. I was sick for the last couple of days, so.
You went up to Petaluma, right?
Yes, sir.
And you looked sharp when
and
you were
I
there.
Saw Jeff.
Yeah, you saw
I
Jeff.
I went to see Jeff. So
cool.
So talk about this, because I don't think a lot of people are aware of this event that you guys went to.
All Jeff, right, do you want to fill them in? Yeah.
Sure. So I was at the Mac Computer Expo in Petaluma, and it's a one-day event where they have like a little vendor expo thing and a bunch of classes. And so I was there talking about iPhone apps. And Mac Observer had a booth set up, and Adam came by. That was so cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was going to be in the area, and I've known about the Mac Computer Expo for a while. Lorraine, who puts it on, she had invited me in the past, and then I got an email, and she's like, "Oh, it's happening this weekend," and she listed everybody who's going to be there, and I was like, "Oh, well, Jeff's going to be there, and Gene's going to be there from Smile on My Mac," and I'm like, "I'm going to be in the area about an hour away. I cannot not go this time." So,
you went and you
just drove over. Yeah, it was a really fun event. It was, you know, they had some great sessions going on. Jeff did a cool talk on all kinds of great iPhone apps and just kind of hung out and, you know, saw a couple of fans, and it was fun.
Cool. Well, let's get on into it, because last show was pretty lengthy and not traditional format, but everybody seemed to enjoy it, so that's good. So the first thing we were talking about tonight is the that Apple released an iPhone update 3.1.2. Wonder what happened to 3.1.1.
Oh, I totally know the answer to that.
Really? You took that?
Yeah. Huh?
What happened?
Okay, so when iPhone OS 3.1 came out, that was for the iPhone. The same day, the version that was released for the iPod Touch was 3.1.1.
Uh-huh.
So there was already a 3.1.1 update that had been released. So when this new update came out, it was 3.1.2. And it's the same version number for the iPhone and iPod Touch. So now they're back in sync with their update numbers.
So do you think that this was even an update to do anything? You think it might have just been an update to sync up the version numbers? Because I haven't seen any difference.
You know, I had not gotten around to updating my iPod Touch until today. And I haven't noticed anything different yet. However, so far all I've done with my Touch since doing the upgrade is play with Tweety.
Mm-hmm. So
they made a big deal about it, some sort of wake from sleep issue in the release notes, which I had never seen before or even heard of.
So according to Apple, it resolves a sporadic issue that may cause iPhone to not wake from sleep, which actually I've seen that kind of, but I think it's been there forever where, you know, you'll hit the power button or the home button
and nothing will happen.
Yeah. And then you hit it again and then it comes on and goes right back off.
Yeah. And I have experienced that, but not since installing the update on my iPhone.
3.1.2?
Right. And, okay. And I did install the 3.1.2 update within like an hour of it coming out.
Okay. Well, for me, when I updated immediately after, I had a hard crash, like a kernel panic reboot. And then after that, I feel like it did just shut down again after that. But now it's behaving itself. I gave it a full, you know, reboot because it does, you know, a slow kind of reboot type deal at first. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. I feel like 3.1 has been weird. Have you guys experienced any weirdness with 3.1?
Yeah, actually, the other thing that the 3.1.2 update was supposed to fix, the thing where you just lose your carrier connection.
Oh, yeah.
That was a problem I was having.
I wasn't
I
having
that
problem
that
at
since.
All. But yeah, that also resolves an intermittent issue that may kill that network service.
Yeah, and the only fix for that was to restart your iPhone.
Oh, see, I had not had that issue. But they also updated the carrier settings for AT&T. So they were at 5.5 when they announced MMS, and now they're at 5.6.
So do you know what was in that carrier setting update? Because I don't.
Whatever change has been made is not apparent on the front end to me or anybody else.
My assumption was that they did something because of all of the cell tower updates they've been making.
Okay.
And I'm just guessing, but the timing would fit that.
What sort of cell tower updates are you referring to?
Well, okay, so like in Denver, and at first I thought it was just a localized carrier update, but apparently it's more than just the Denver area.
Right, right.
AT&T has started a year-long upgrade in the Denver metro area where they're I don't know if they're adding more towers or if they're upgrading the equipment on the towers they already have, but cell coverage is improving through the whole area. 3G data coverage is improving, and there's areas in the Denver area where coverage has been, but you couldn't even get edge. It was almost like being in Austin.
Oh.
And yeah. And so we're going through these little phases where for like a week or two, an area where you had coverage, you suddenly don't. But then when you get your coverage back, it's way better than it ever was before.
Huh.
So my assumption was the carrier update had something to do with that.
Interesting. Maybe. I haven't actually looked into it, and I should probably tear that carrier update apart and look into it and find
nothing. Yes, hop on that.
I will right now. This is really interesting, though. From AdMob, they're saying that many users are not updating to 3.1. 51% of devices. We should explain what AdMob is. AdMob is, they put ads on, you know, iPhone apps, right? And so they also track that information of the ads being served on the devices. And so 51% of the devices, that are exposed to AdMob ads are still running 3.0. And 19% are running 2.2.1, and 7% are running 2.0 or earlier, which is very interesting. They also pointed out that a majority of the devices that are below, 3.0 are iPod touches.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm just looking through this, and it's interesting to wonder why people aren't updating. If it's a matter of these people just don't plug in their phones that often and get the little, you know, hey, it's time to update thing, or if it's, you know, more people saying they don't want to because maybe they enabled tethering. I have a friend who, you know, is staying on 3.0. because, you know, he wants the tethering.
I bet for a lot of people, it's that they just simply don't get that the updates are out there. They're not connecting their phone to their computer.
Right.
Because keep in mind, there's a lot of iPhone owners out there that aren't the tech-savvy people, and so they don't get what these updates are.
Exactly,
They just know that they have a phone that finally makes sense for them.
They have They have a telephone, and they treat it as a phone, you know, as in the traditional sense of, you know, you don't why would you plug it into your computer?
Sure.
So I'm looking at this. So it's 91% of iPhones, the iPhone ad requests are coming from 3.0 or later. That's 91%, and just 35% come from the touches. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, the touch, you have to pay for, what is it, $5 right now to update to 3.0 or 3.1? If you're at two.
Oh, right. If you're at two.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know. I don't remember what it cost. It was like $5 or $10.
Yeah. Well, it's a money thing. Yeah, so it's interesting, but it looks like half of the people are still on 3.0. Half of the iPod or the iPhone people. Interesting. So, Adam, do you have any thoughts of that?
No, I'm trying to figure out some other stuff here. I'm distracted.
Your quality has been reduced to that of a Cylon.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I was watching my technical call details, and the problem is I have, for some reason, massive send packet loss, and I'm just watching the number go up. It was at like 3, and now it's like at 7.
Hmm.
And I've got nothing running, so I don't know why it's freaking out. So I got distracted by that because I was like, why is this happening?
Okay, we're back. Adam's having some issues with his ISP right now in regards to Skype, so we'll probably let you go as soon as you sound, well, you don't sound like a person anymore.
It's too bad to bear.
Yes. So let's move.
You know, I'm really shocked that we're having Skype-related issues.
Yeah, me too. It's weird. So let's move on. Let's talk about MMS. It's here. It's been here for a week or two right now. I haven't had any issues. AT&T said that they were pleased with the launch. However, some users, of course, have, you know, raised their voices and said that it sucks. It's not working as well as it should. Adam, since you may be leaving us shortly, how do you feel about the MMS rollout?
I'm just fine with it. I kind of have to eat my lunch because I had been one of the big people complaining. I think I was complaining a lot just on principle, the whole principle, the fact that the iPhone couldn't do MMS, I felt it should have it, but ask me the sum total of how many MMSs I've actually sent since they've turned it on.
How many?
One.
And was it a picture of your cat?
Just to see that it worked.
Was it a picture of your cat?
No.
Okay.
All right. So Michael, the first picture you tweeted, it was of your cat, wasn't it? Or MMS'd.
Oh yeah, of course.
And same thing for me. Nightshade was totally the first thing that I MMS'd.
What else are you gonna MMS?
It's honestly when I have used MMS for testing purposes. So someone needs to learn how to use it. I show them how, and I send them a picture of Nightshade, and then they send me back a picture of whatever they have on their phone, and that's been it. Although. Everyone that I know with the first generation iPhone, the MMSing is a complete fail. Now, granted, they can't actually do MMS, but they should still get the same crappy message with the link to go to a website and type in a password and then look at the picture. What I'm finding is none of the people with first gen iPhones that I send an MMS to ever see the message.
See any sort of message at all.
Yeah, they have no indication that I ever sent them anything.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, but they're getting text messages just fine. It's just the MMS.
I wonder if this latest update or carrier update may fix that.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so also, you know, very interesting, in spite of the fact that AT&T's just, you know, got all this extra stuff floating around as far as MMS goes, they've also decided to allow VoIP over their 3G network, which is something I did not see coming at all. So Skype and Apple have both responded to that. Apple, of course, says, you know, we'll add that to, we'll amend our agreements with the developers. And, the Skype people, of course, are thrilled to hear this. And right now, I don't think there are any VoIP apps yet that work over the 3G network. But it's good to hear. Do you think this is going to change anything? I think it's a very substantial thing. Or do you think, because I honestly don't see myself using Skype that much.
you know, the people I see using Skype are people that are in areas where their AT&T coverage is crappy, but they can get on Wi-Fi, and so they make Skype phone calls over Wi-Fi.
So they make a Skype out call?
Yeah, so they're using it for Skype out.
Okay.
And honestly, I think AT&T's move to allow VoIP, I think it's totally a preemptive move so that they can have a little bit of ammunition when they try and tell the FTC, hey, look, we don't need to have more regulation over what's going over our data network, the whole net neutrality thing.
Oh, right. You want to talk about that?
So, sure. All right. So the deal is that the FTC is
FCC.
Now... What did I say FTC?
Yeah.
How sad. I can't even spell FCC. Wow. Okay. So the FCC is going to be pushing for new regulations that will enforce a net neutrality sort of thing on wireless carriers as well.
Yeah. And,
well, it's going to be kind of a general thing, but wireless carriers, which means that a company like AT&T wouldn't be able to stop anyone from doing voice over IP on 3G, nor would they be able to stop people from streaming movies, things like that. So I think that AT&T's move to say, hey, we're allowing VoIP is an act on their part to try and show the FCC that they shouldn't be implementing these new rules.
You know, that does make a lot of sense. And to be honest, as much as I feel like we eventually we'll need some kind of net neutrality legislation acted upon the cell network. Right now, I think it's still so fragile, as we've seen with the iPhone over the last 2 years, with the amount of bandwidth that it sends, that we need to give the carriers more time.
Yeah, well, this is totally the iPhone, I think, is totally a wake-up call, not just for AT&T, but for all the cell carriers in the United States, because I have a feeling that they have all been overselling their bandwidth, knowing that most people won't ever come close to using what they have.
Right.
And then the iPhone comes along where you can actually use your phone to do stuff, and people do. And so now we have all these carriers going, oh, crap, our networks actually can't hold the bandwidth that we're selling.
Right.
And so AT&T, of course, is taking it in the pants on this one, because they're the company that actually has the iPhone. And so it's most obvious there. But I have a feeling if this was any other carrier in the United States, we'd be seeing the exact same things.
Sure. I think so, too. So, to move on, this is an interesting story. Google Maps, we've been seeing reports, I think it's from, the Apple blog, has seen reports of Google Maps now showing sponsored ads in the iPhone Maps application. Now, at first when I read this story, I thought, ads in the Maps app? That's ridiculous. I don't understand. How would that? I mean, I don't see any ads as I, you know, pull something up. But the way it works, if you haven't seen this screenshot, someone over at the Apple blog searched for sushi in New York. And there is something that does not look like a traditional, you know, iPhone pin in the map.
It's a little square thing.
It's a little square thing. It looks like a little, you know, like a restaurant or something. And it says the name of the... you know, the place, and below it, it says sponsored link. Now, I've gone and, you know, over to New York City on, you know, the Maps application, typed in Sushi New York, just as it says on the Apple blog, and I don't see the sponsored ad.
I've been able to do it in Denver.
You've seen some sponsored ads?
Yeah, and actually, I ended up getting JCPenney, because I was doing, I forgot what my search was, but I was searching for different things. And one of the searches I did, I don't know if I was looking for shoes or clothes or whatever, but I ended up getting the JCPenney's in Westminster, Colorado.
Okay. So the idea is you type in a traditional Google Maps query, and the first thing that it defaults to, the first pin that it chooses, is going to be the sponsored pin, if there is a sponsored pin for that category in your area.
Right. And but if there's other things that match your criteria as well, those normal pins show up too.
So it's obvious that it's different, and it does say sponsored link.
Yes. And if you tap the link, then you'll see the normal contact info screen.
So it's not going to be anything weird.
It's not anything weird. And okay, so actually the last thing I did for a business search on my iPod Touch was that. And so, yeah, it was JCPenney's. And right below the company name, it says, visit your local JCPenney's store and find great deals on home and apparel. And then it just has all the rest of the stuff that you would normally expect to see in a contact screen.
So that doesn't seem too menacing.
It's not too menacing. For some people, I'm sure it's going to freak them out because, well, okay, here's the thing that concerns me about it. And it's not so much that this is something Google will do, but now it becomes something people will think about, which is Google manipulating the results that I get when I type in a kind of general search? Like if I'm looking for coffee shops, will I find all the coffee shops around me, or is it going to start showing just the ones that are sponsored links? I don't think that's really going to happen, but people will now think about that. And I think that that in and of itself is a problem because people will not be trusting the information they get in the way they used to.
Well, we've heard the story. I don't know if we covered this story, but are you familiar with the story about Apple hiring or setting up their own maps company?
Yeah, they bought Place. Crap, I can't remember what it's called. Place something.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. They bought a map service.
PlaySpace.
Thank you, Adam. And PlaySpace. There we go. I'm looking at the article now from CNET. It appears that Apple has purchased PlaySpace, a company that produces a maps API called Pushpin, and offered a mapping service much like Google Maps. And from what I've heard from various places, such as macOS Ken, it's a little better, possibly, than the current Google Maps, setup. So Apple may be able to, do a little bit more with it. But I guess the benefit to using a place, something like PlaySpace, where Apple has a little more control over it, is they can do a little more and they won't have to worry about, talking to Google and then working around what kind of agreements Google has with the maps providers, because Google doesn't actually have those aren't Google's maps. Those are licensed for Google Maps. So potentially Apple could have, all the same maps that Google Maps does. They would just simply, be providing them, directly from Apple, through, their own licenses and stuff like that. So they may be able to provide more information. However, as I'm talking through this, Google is the only one doing the Street View, correct?
As far as I know.
So that's their actual stuff. So they have their own Google, cars. And I actually, have you seen any of those Google cars around, the Google Street View cars?
Yeah.
Did you, I have a friend who saw one parked at a place around Rockford and nabbed the magnet on the side of the car that says Google Maps or Street View.
Okay, that's more than I've been able to do. I've actually seen them. Well, the Google Street View cars have been around Denver for a long time because Denver was one of the test markets.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and they have a Google office in Denver, another one up in Boulder. So seeing Google stuff happening here on a regular basis is nothing new. And I've seen several cars over the past couple of years driving around with the bubble thing on it. Yeah. But I've never been able to get up to one to steal a magnet off the car. Not that I would condone doing such a thing.
Not that I would either, but it was awesome.
And it'll look great on his car when he's driving around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I suppose, what do you guys think about this? Do you think this is I'm a little hesitant to be positive about this. It does, you know, it does suck that it seems like Apple and Google, their relationship isn't doing too well anymore. I think that's pretty apparent. Obviously that, you know, Eric Schmidt is no longer on the board. Obviously, you know, Google Voice didn't get approved in the App Store. It wasn't denied, according to Apple. But, you know, it's sad. It's I don't want to see that relationship completely torn apart because, you know, having Google Maps on the iPhone was one of those wow moments. You know, when they first said Google Maps on the iPhone, I think because nothing works like Google Maps right now. It's a fantastic service. And especially with the Street View. Street View, you know, initially seemed very gimmicky, but it's quite useful.
Yeah, it is. Okay. I think that there's a lot more to the whole place-based purchase than...
simply replacing.
Right. Because one of the killer things about place-based is that it can do all of this really powerful, rich metadata overlay stuff with your maps. And okay. I think it's more about that.
So you think they may be extending the Google Maps on the iPhone with this information?
Sure. I mean, why should Apple go back and have to rebuild all of the map stuff and create all of their own infrastructure when Google Maps is already there?
Yeah, that would be insane.
Right. So you could still have Street View. You can still have all the stuff that Google Maps gives you. But then Apple can overlay their own information. And since they would be controlling that information, then it becomes a lot easier to link all that metadata in with everything else that you're doing. So your other Apple apps, stuff that's going back to iPhoto, like when you're taking photos, you can have a lot more metadata that's included with those images.
Yeah, and I guess
and then you can link that into iPhoto as well.
Yeah, we're assuming that this is, you know, an iPhone thing, but it could just be more for, you know, they're including, you know, map information in a lot of stuff now.
Sure. I mean, well, of course, iPhoto, which I just mentioned. And then if you look in Snow Leopard at the date and time preference pane, Right. Okay, it's now using map data for your location so that it can set your time zone automatically.
Right, yeah. And locations are, you know, a big deal, you know, as far as, you know, adding information to, you know, just everything. Location helps a lot. So, you know, it makes sense for them to be getting into that. And I'm hoping that we're not going to, you know, see Google Maps, you know, taken off the iPhone.
I would be shocked if that happened.
Okay. So related to that, Google has announced that Gmail now has push on the iPhone. Now, it's not, although I haven't really looked at it, that may be one of the things that they added. You can't just simply click, you know, Gmail and while you're setting up your mail and have push. It actually, you have to go through and set it up in a kind of a little more interesting way. You have to go through the Exchange. You have to add it as an Exchange account. And, you know, people have been complaining that when you delete a message, it does not delete. It actually goes into the archive. So this may be good for some people. It may be, you know, way too confusing for some others. I think it's good to see push, you know, finally from Gmail for sure. I don't need push, I guess, because I already have so many emails I don't know what to do with. But I have noticed recently with the Google notifier on my desktop, that those notifications come in, or I should say I'm using Mailplane, but those, you know, they've had push on for a while, I've noticed, because I get those email updates as soon as I get an email.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so I don't know. I it's good to see it, and they have it, and hooray. So, Adam, I think you're almost completely gone.
I'm just being quiet to avoid jumping in with too much bad audio. So,
well, do we want to let you jump out, or should we?
Well, it's up to you. I mean, I have a comment on the Google Push thing. It's a no go because I already use an Exchange account, and the iPhone will only do one Exchange account. So, anybody who's in an enterprise situation really still doesn't have the option because it uses ActiveSync.
Okay, so you can only have one account set up with ActiveSync.
Well, so it's more like a hack.
Probably a licensing issue. Well, no, they're just Google's using ActiveSync technology to do the push. I mean, basically, they must have set up some sort of bridge exchange server kind of thing with Gmail.
Okay.
That's my guess. You know, I don't know the inner workings of Google or how they set it up, but I do know if you go to the Google mobile page, you know, they have it not just for iPhones, but for other devices and Blackberries. And I think it's because they're using an exchange server and the ActiveSync technology. The iPhone has the limitation of only being able to set up one exchange account. And I think that's probably because Apple has to license ActiveSync probably for every, you know, I don't know how the licensing deal works out, but.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's, should we talk about Dropbox now for the iPhone? Because we were talking about Dropbox last show with Merlin. And I don't think the Dropbox app had come out since at that point. So, Jeff, I think you use Dropbox, right?
I do. Dropbox saves my ass.
Okay, and what do you use Dropbox for?
Well, I'm actually using it to make sure that critical files that I need are always available to me. And actually, it really did save my ass when I was at Mac Computer Expo, because I had a problem where specific files that I needed for my presentation were broken. And so I had to go back to my Dropbox, and I had people putting files in my Dropbox for me so that I have up-to-date newer versions that weren't broken. And everything was just in there for me. So people could get the files into the Dropbox, and then when I had my internet connection, they downloaded to my hard drive, and so then I had everything. I could put it back together and save the day.
So for people who don't know, Dropbox is an online storage and kind of sync solution, right? And is it Mac only for the Dropbox plugin kind of thing, or is it Mac and PC?
I have no idea. I would assume that they would have a PC version of their plugin. At least I hope they would, because it's so slick. It just makes the Dropbox thing appear as if it's just any other folder on your hard drive.
Right. So you get to, you know, you have the plugin and there's a folder on your computer called Dropbox, and it's a regular folder, except that anything you put in there gets synced up to the Dropbox server as well, which means anything else that looks at that folder can sync it back down. It pulls that back down locally, and so you can look at that offline if you want to. But you can also, you know, go to the website and download those files, or you know, you can share links.
The sharing part is awesome. You know, where you let other people access a folder in a Dropbox.
Yeah, so you can be really. You can say certain people get access, or everybody gets access to a specific folder.
Yeah, it's really nice, because then you know everyone has the same files all the time.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, they announced their iPhone version of the app. Now you can't edit anything. You can only get access to it. You can only read the files. And I don't think there's
right, but you can take photos and have them go right into your Dropbox.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, you can do photos right now, and I'm guessing that, you know, they just wanted to get it out on the phone, and there will be more additions to it later on.
That makes sense, but you know, still being able to take the application, launch it on your iPhone, and look and see what files are there and what's been changed, so you know if you need to whip out your laptop and find Wi-Fi somewhere so that you can download your files.
Yeah.
That's really handy.
Mm-hmm. So let's see what we're going to move on to next. Adobe is planning to launch tools to allow people to build Flash-based apps for the iPhone. So Jeff, have you looked at the story? It looks like they're going to have an app on the iPhone that runs Flash stuff within that. Have you looked at the story at all?
Yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. You're wrong, but that's okay because I'll make sure that you're right now. The deal is Flash CS5 will include an iPhone application compiler. So you have to write your apps in ActionScript 3, and then the compiler will build iPhone applications, real applications as if you coded them in Xcode.
Okay.
The thing is, though, since you're doing it in Flash, you don't have the hooks to some of the interface things that you would have if you're actually doing it in Xcode. So there will be certain limitations. You won't be able to call certain types of data, I believe. And you can't call other Flash content. So you can't write an application in Flash CS5 that calls SWF files from somewhere else. Everything has to actually be contained in the application. And Adobe seeded the beta code to a few different companies. So there's already been like 7 different applications that have hit the App Store that were coded in Flash CS5. And, I've played with a couple of them.
Which apps were they?
There's one, it was a game. It's like an image matching game. I think it's called Red Hood. And it's like Little Red Riding Hood post-apocalypse goes on the hunt to find her grandma. And it's just a bunch of pictures. And you have to find the differences in the pictures and you move to the different levels. There was another one. It's like Nuclear Atom or something. And it's a game where you have to match up shapes. And that one looked pretty cool. There's another one. I think it's called Refrigerator Magnet. So it's something like that.
Okay,
and that one's really cool because it's a collaborative game over Bluetooth, I believe.
So how's performance on these?
Totally fine.
Really?
Yeah. The only reason I knew that I was looking at Flash application. Okay, that's not right. The only reason I knew that I was looking at applications that had been written originally in the Flash application was that Adobe had them all listed.
Hmm.
And otherwise, I wouldn't have known. If anyone's playing with the South Park avatar creator for the iPhone, that's one of the apps that was done with Flash CS5.
Interesting. I'll have to take a look at that. Do you know if it's free?
South
Park avatar?
It's like $1 or $2.
Okay.
Yeah, and now Flash CS5, the public beta, will be coming out later this year. So when I was talking with the Adobe people, they told me that it will definitely be out before the end of the year, and they're planning on having it out before Christmas. So do you know in the next few weeks.
Do you know if they're running within a special environment on these applications? So the application, is it like a Java virtual machine kind of thing?
Nope. It's when you're working on it in Flash, it's just a Flash application. When you export it for the iPhone, it actually compiles native iPhone code.
Right, but I'm guessing they're not taking every instruction in Flash and translating it into something that the iPhone can do. I assume they're keeping those instructions just about the same thing and kind of putting it on top of this Flash layer.
I don't know what they're doing with the individual commands, but what they told me is that there's no wrapper.
Gotcha.
It's just a native iPhone app just across the board. So now whether or not they're actually leaving their own little commands in there and then creating hooks that link to the other thing, I would assume that's not happening because they said there's no wrapper.
Okay. So have you had a chance to check out the AT&T microcell yet?
I haven't, but I can't get one in Denver.
Oh, why not?
It's not in the area.
They don't.
We're not in one of the areas.
Okay.
So, hey, Cylon Adam, do they have them out where you are yet?
I don't know, and I'm gonna have to drop off because this is just going to be crappy.
Okay. So, Adam,
it's getting worse and worse.
I will. Do you want to save your iPhone pick for next week or?
Yeah, I had good ones too.
Okay.
So.
I then I'll let you go. But first, I gotta say that you should check out Adam's show. he's going to go off and record a new episode now. The MacCast at MacCast.com. And of course, check him out on Twitter at Twitter.com/MacCast. And we always appreciate having you on, Adam, even if you do sound like a Cylon.
Cylon apologies to everyone.
All right. We'll see you later.
It won't be the same without you. I'll miss you while you're gone.
All right. See ya. So, yeah, I haven't, you know, I didn't even realize that you had to check and see if it was available in your area. Isn't the, so the microcell is something that you plug into your current internet connection.
Right.
And it produces an AT&T, it's a little tower in
your
house.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that you had to be in a specific area.
Well, eventually that's going to change. They're doing a slow rollout, you know, because that's the AT&T way.
Yeah, now that they've had experience with the iPhone anyway.
Yeah, something like that, I'm assuming.
So I'm at the AT&T microcell website, and I'm clicking on availability. And this is just me riffing.
Right, and so if you pop in your zip code, it's either going to tell you that...
Yeah, it says not available.
Yeah. So it's from what I understand, it's very limited, like just a small handful of cities right now. And it's not even like full cities. It's regions and cities.
So if I got this thing, it wouldn't work.
No. Okay. From what I understand, if you could get someone in one of those cities to get one and then set it up, you should be able to take it anywhere else that AT&T has service, plug it into an internet connection, and it will work. Because AT&T says you can travel with these.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really need another tower in the area.
Well, no, because it's not using a tower at all. It becomes a tower. All it needs is your broadband internet connection.
So it does a 40-foot radius from the device. That's
cool.
What it says.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it says 5,000. I'm reading this article. 5,000 square feet, about 40 feet radius from the device.
Right. So. And depending on which plan you buy with it, it's either it uses your existing cell plan minutes when just as if it was any other cell tower, or it. There's another plan you can buy for it where you get unlimited minutes. Because it becomes free.
So it is free. The device is $150, no monthly fees, but there is that option of the unlimited calling, which is $20 a month. So it's kind of, right. It becomes that, that T-Mobile kind of setup, right? Where if you start the call, from your microcell, And even if you move away, that call is unlimited, right?
Yes, that's right.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I would love to have this device. For whatever reason, AT&T doesn't work well in my house. And it doesn't, ironically, it doesn't work too well in the iPhone Alley offices either. We don't. If you go into the middle of the office, it's you get zero bars.
You know, the TMO Central Towers where I am, it used to be that when the iPhone 3G came out, I had to shut 3G off. Oh. Otherwise, I couldn't get any signal at all, even outside.
Okay, so right outside my door, I have 5 bars, but it's the bunker that this office is built into.
Yeah, well,
we're 50 floors down, so that...
Yeah, 50 floors down. Now, for me, with the updates AT&T's been making in the Denver area, I can now sit in my office on 3G and I have a good signal. Where before, if I was in my office, I had to switch to Edge. Anywhere else, I could be on 3G and it would be an okay signal. Now it's a good, strong 3G signal everywhere.
Hmm.
So the whole thing about the microcell, I would love to have one and play with it, but it's not important for me like it used to be.
Gotcha. Yeah, it'd be more important for, office buildings, you know, that don't get good coverage just because of the, because of the building. And it's the same way at my house, actually. You know, 5 bars right out the door, you know, hardly anything inside. It's really strange. So I think the last story, unless you wanted to talk about anything else, Netflix has said, we initially thought that Netflix might be coming to the iPhone. And of course, they came back and said, you know, their CEO said, nope, we have no intention of coming to the iPhone. We're going to stick to what we're doing. And they have no intention of doing that anytime in the future, which, you know, they say that it's something that's likely to come over time, but nothing in the short term. So they're not focused on mobile just yet. They're just focused on TV, Blu-ray, and video game consoles. That's from their CEO.
I wonder if that has anything to do with their deal with Microsoft. Because they're using Microsoft DRM.
Oh, because of the... what's that?
Silverlight.
Silverlight, yeah.
Which... Okay, so here's some trivia for you, which may or may not get you a drink the next time you're out at a bar. Silverlight, it's a competitor to Flash, of course. And Silverlight is an old term for a photo flash. So Silverlight, Flash, and then there. Okay. Apparently, I found that interesting and no one else did.
That is interesting. I'll buy you a beer next time I see you.
Sweet.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that they were using Microsoft's DRM for that, because, of course, if you go to watch live on Netflix.com, you'll use the Silverlight player, and it actually works fine for me. There's also the Roku box and, you know, the Xbox.
TiVo HD.
So it's unfortunate that it's not coming. I guess if they are using Microsoft's DRM, they'd have to figure out another way to either put Silverlight on the iPhone or get some other method of playing, such as what YouTube has done as far as giving iPhone users access to just a standard MOV file.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, unless you have anything else to talk about this week, anything interesting come up? You can say no.
I was running all kinds of stuff through my head to see if there's something that was really important.
Well, while you think about it, I'd like to talk about our sponsor, which is Smile on My Mac, and their product, Text Expander, and of course, Text Expander Touch, which is their iPhone application. Text Expander is one of my favorite apps on my Mac, and it allows me to take a small amount of text and make it big. It's a text expander does, and my address, I take -ADDR will expand it to my entire address, or my iPhone universal ID, something that I'll never remember, something I don't want to put in a text file and keep pasting out of every time I need to send someone that information. It's just it allows me to set up as many shortcuts as I want. And not have to worry about that. Just remember the little shortcuts, and it'll make all that text appear. So, when I set up the show notes for the podcast, there's a lot of stuff that I would normally have to type out, URLs and HTML and all that kind of stuff. But I just type -podcast, and it just pops it right in there. And
isn't that a beautiful thing?
Oh, it's so good. And so now you can get that fantastic stuff on your iPhone with Text Expander Touch. So you don't have to use Text Expander on your Mac. And of course, it's not on the PC. So you can use that as a standalone application, but there is syncing between Text Expander Touch and the desktop version. You can sync all of your snippets across back and forth and have the same ones on your phone that you do have on your computer. It has integration with several major Twitter applications. So you can say, send to whatever Twitter app, or it'll also send it right into the mail. So you can compose your message in Text Expander, because there's no backgrounding on the iPhone, is what I should mention. But you can compose that in Text Expander. When you're finished, hit send to mail. It pops right up in mail, and you can hit send and you're good to go. So you have access to all of your snippets that way. And of course, they have this fantastic API that they have open for all developers of the iPhone to use. They can plug the Text Expander engine into their application and get access to the same database that Text Expander Touch has as an app on your phone. So, the result is You know, you have all those snippets.
The result is I stopped using Notepad and switched to Writeroom for all of my notes on my iPhone because it's Text Expander aware.
Because Writeroom has Text Expander. That's one of the new things. Mm-hmm. And also the new, well, I'll talk about this in a minute because it's my pick. There's another app that we're going to talk about that has Text Expander integration, which is I was very excited to hear. So you can, you know, and it also does cool things that I didn't realize this before, but it has built-in stuff. Text Expander mm-hmm. allows you to, you know, if you type in like cafe, for example, it'll automatically add the accent to the E on cafe. So it has a bunch of accented words and stuff like that. So just, you know, stuff that makes life a little bit easier. So, and of course, you can do HTML and stuff on your Mac. You can do scripting, too. So if I type dash shorten, it'll take whatever URL I have in my clipboard and shorten that up to, you know, a tiny URL or whatever I want to have it do. So Text Expander Touch is $4.99 in the App Store, and Text Expander for the Mac is $29.95, and a free trial is available. Definitely check it out, at least on your Mac. Check out the free trial and realize just, you know, how useful this application is, because we love talking about apps that, you know, we use every day. I just feel weird sitting at a Mac without Text Expander on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. Actually, for me, I don't want to use other Macs if Text Expander isn't there and if it doesn't have my set of snippets.
Exactly. So Text Expander, check them out. Smile on my Mac, smileonmymac.com. Support us by supporting our sponsors. And with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks. And Adam is not here this week. So, well, he had to drop out, so he'll be doing a pick next week. Jeff, what is your pick this week?
I think we should make up an app for Adam.
We can do that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's say Adam's app pick was Suicide Girls.
Okay.
Said he could turn his iPhone upside down and watch their clothes fall off and just see them in their underpants.
See, what Jeff isn't telling you is this is his pick. He doesn't want to own up to it.
I have to look at a lot of apps for research. You know, I really have to take one for the team a lot.
Yeah.
So actually, my app is Photoshop Mobile.
Oh, yeah. That's yep. One thing we didn't talk about.
Oh, well, okay, now we will. So Adobe released Photoshop Mobile for the iPhone. It's a native iPhone application that lets you take photos and edit them or grab photos from your photo library or camera roll and edit them. And so it includes a bunch of special effects and cropping and image correction type tools built in that are set up in such a way that it actually really makes sense how you would use the tools. And now keep in mind that if my computer is on, Photoshop is running. And I use Photoshop all the time, every day. And using this on my iPhone, even though it might not have some of the features that you can get in some of the other iPhone image editing apps, I really liked how it was set up and I liked how it worked. It was easy. And I was very pleased when I found that when you edit an image, instead of overwriting the original when you save it, it actually duplicates it and gives you your unaltered original and then an altered version of the photo right there in your photo library.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't, I just now downloaded that as you're talking. It's a free application.
It is. I'm assuming they wrote it in Flash CS5, but I haven't asked them. But it wouldn't surprise me if that's how they did it.
Boy, it sure looks like it. Yeah.
I mean, it looks like what you would expect from a handheld version of Photoshop Elements.
Yeah, wow. This is cool. Great pick. Free in the App Store. You can't get much better than free. Photoshop.com Mobile is the app, and I'm going to be playing with that for a while later on. Have we... Have we picked RampChamp yet? Did I pick that?
I don't remember if we picked it or if we talked about it a lot.
Because I really want to talk about it. And we'll just say that
well,
that's...
it's your show. You can talk about anything you want.
See, you guys keep telling me that, and I don't know. But, okay, so we'll say that Adam's pick this week is RampChamp, because I've been playing that like nobody's business this last week. Of course, I went up to the woods, and I had to play something, so I... downloaded the most recent RampChamp pack. So you can, you know, it comes with, I think, 4 or 5 ramps. RampChamp, if you don't know, is a game from the awesome guys at the Icon Factory. It's one of the most beautiful games I've seen on the iPhone. And it's one of those old school ramp games where you throw a ball up a ramp at the little, you know, like the clown heads or
like ski ball sort of a thing.
Ski ball, yeah. And so you throw the ball and you hit them and you get tickets. And it's just, I don't know why, it's just so much fun and it's just so addicting. Have you checked out RampChamp yet?
I haven't, and that's on purpose because I'm afraid that I really would get hooked on it. So I've been avoiding it. But I want to point out that you went up out to the woods for a vacation, get away from everything. And what do? Instead of going out and playing in nature, you played RampChamp.
I played RampChamp in nature. Does that count?
That's a start.
Yeah. So, I was in the woods playing RampChamp. But what is this? I'm looking at the add-ons because this is more my pick than actually RampChamp itself. So it's...
No, it's more Adam's pick than RampChamp itself.
Right, exactly. So I grabbed the Halloween pack because I saw, you know, Craig Hockenberry on Twitter, Chockenberry. The guys over at Icon Factory, I don't know who exactly did this, but made a rendering of what Chockenberry would look like in the world of RampChamp. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so he Twittered something like, if you've wanted to hit me with a RampChamp, this is your chance. And he showed a screenshot of the Chockenberry popping up in RampChamp. And I haven't figured out how to get him yet, but I'm trying really hard.
See, now you're making me want to go out and get RampChamp.
It's fun. It's really, really fun because of the challenges. It's not just throwing the ball and getting the tickets. It's, you know, they give you, you know, the challenges aren't even very telling of how you have to do this. It just says, eradicate the stray organist. And you have to figure out what that means.
Okay, so have you played Free versus Ski Ball game?
No, I have not.
Okay, so you won't be able to tell me how it compares to that. Because that's actually like, you know, when you go to a boardwalk or an old arcade and they have the real ski ball?
Yeah.
That's exactly what the Free versus game is. But you can move your iPhone around and like as if you could pick up the entire ski ball thing and put English on your balls and, you know, spin them around and stuff. But it's not like you get special challenges. And you certainly don't have a Chockenberry head floating around ever.
Nope, you only get that from the Icon Factory.
That's right, because Chockenberry, didn't he actually sell his soul to Icon Factory? He is the property of Icon Factory now.
He is the property of Icon Factory, and he is Icon Factory.
See, there you go.
See, and I'm playing it right now, and oh no, I made a bunch of, oh boy. You know the Howling Wolf shirt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those guys pop up, the wolves pop up at some point.
So that's totally got to be a nod to Will Shipley then, I'm assuming, because wasn't Will the guy that totally made the Howling Wolf thing happen at Worldwide Developers Conference?
I don't remember. I wasn't there, but...
I think it was Will Shipley that did that.
Maybe.
And if you don't know who Will Shipley is,
he's awesome.
Yeah, he's the guy from Delicious Munster, yep. Makes Delicious Library.
He's the brain behind Delicious Library.
He is.
He's the giant throbbing brain behind Delicious Library.
You said throbbing.
I know. So yeah.
Does it make you sad that we don't have Delicious Library for the iPhone anymore?
Oh, it makes me so sad. I wanted to check that out just for design.
I snatched it up right away.
You're gonna have to send me some screenshots, but yeah, okay. So back to our picks: RampChamp, and specifically the Halloween ramp pack. You get 2 extra ramps for 99 cents, and it just adds a whole bunch of more fun. It's not just you know, an extra design. It's a whole bunch of challenges and stuff. And RampChamp is $2.99 or $3.99. I cannot remember.
I'm not even looking at iTunes, so I have no idea.
It's $1.99. What a bargain.
Holy crap.
That's a bargain. Go get it. Yeah. So check that out. Now, my pick, because that was Adam's pick, my pick this week, and you guys can probably guess what it is, because it's Tweety 2.
I never would have guessed.
I know. So I've actually been playing with Tweety 2 for the last month or two, and I haven't been able to talk about it. But it's always satisfying to see that developers are actually taking your advice and implementing the suggestions.
I'm betting that once Tweety 2 was available, that there's several people that work for Apple that actually did the head desk thing when they saw some of the interface elements, because there are several things that 8-bits did where I'm looking at going, oh my God, why didn't Apple come up with this?
Like what? Okay.
Like flicking down to reload more tweets.
Oh yeah.
I do that in Mail now and get pissed off because it doesn't load more messages.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. I've been doing are you aware of the swipe from left to right on the back button?
Okay, you know what? That's actually something that I need to bring up with the 8-bits team, because that is so right-handed, I can't do it.
Oh, okay. So you're aware of it, but you just can't.
I can't do it. I have tried and tried, and there's people that are going to probably comment on Twitter and send emails saying, you're kidding me. You are that uncoordinated that you can't do the right-handed swipe thing, even though you're left-handed.
And then they'll realize that they're talking.
Trust me, for some of us lefties, there are specific types of movements that just simply don't work.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I can do it with my left hand, but I don't know.
I cannot get it to work. I wish there was a feature in there, or a setting where I could go in and tap it and would go into lefty mode. And then it takes all those buttons and flops them to the other side. And then the swipes move the opposite direction.
Okay. Well, okay. So for people who don't know.
For normal people
who don't have the name Jeff Gamet.
Right.
If you are, you know, you've probably used Tweety in the past, and you know that it's really easy to get, you know, 10 levels deep into the hierarchy because it's so easy to just get through this stuff, but then you have to hit back 5 times. Now you can just swipe from left to right on that little back button, and it'll take you back to the main screen.
It's very cool. I've seen people do it, so I know it actually works.
Yeah.
But I just can't do it myself.
Yeah. So let me think. I'm looking at, you know, what are the main features for Tweety 2? So besides...
It has text expander support.
Oh, yes. It has text expander support. Yeah. So if I, if I type in, oh boy. Yeah. It does a little pop sound and expands all my text. It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. You know, I like seeing the preview of photos. Like if someone does a twit pick.
Yep. It'll add a little square preview below it.
Right.
You can.
I like that.
You can jump through tweets in single tweet mode like you could in Twitterific.
Right. It has Instapaper integration.
Yep. Oh, boy. I love Tweety. There's an absurdly huge review of Tweety 2 that I wrote. On iPhone Alley, if you go to iPhone.
Yeah, that's Alley. A nice review, actually.
Did you read through that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's very thorough.
Yeah, I thought it was really nice.
1,300 or 1,400 words. But don't, you know, just add that to your Instapaper. It's fine. You can read that later.
That's right. Actually, I did add it to my Instapaper as one of my tests.
Cool. Yeah, so iPhoneAlley.com/reviews. And you can check out the full Tweety 2 review, and it's actually from the standpoint of someone who's never used Tweety. So for someone who hasn't done that yet, you can read that and fully grok everything. But for those who have, there's a nice rundown of all the changes, the significant changes in Tweety 2 at the very bottom. So you can check that out. And Tweety 2 is $2.99 in the App Store, and it's well worth it.
It is.
Yes. So With that, I will say that iPhoneAlley.com is where you can get more news, tips, and reviews. Of course, you can share a tip if you find something cool on your iPhone and you want everybody to know about it. Let us know. Or if you have a product or an app that you want reviewed, hit the contact link on the side of the page. And of course, the iPhone picks that we give every week, as well as our show notes, can be found at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. And for those of you who listened to our episode last week with Merlin, I did manage to listen through and pull together all 8,000 applications he picked. He picked every app in the App Store. And and there's a giant list there if you want to check that out. Of course, feedback can be sent to iPhone or to podcast at iPhoneAlley.com. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, the MacObserver.com, and of course, the iPodObserver.com, and JeffOrama.com, and and Twitter.com/JGamet.
Because apparently I can't shut up.
Well, that's what we like about you, Jeff. If you didn't talk, we wouldn't want you on the show.
It would actually be kind of a boring show since it's audio.
Yeah, it would just be me talking, and God knows I could do that. So well, we're saving all. Yeah, Jeff is the buffer between me and silence.
Well, I finally figured out what my purpose in life is.
To be my buffer. And, of course, Adam Christensen's at the MacCast at MacCast.com and Twitter.com/MacCast. And my Twitter is Twitter.com/Michael Johnston. You will not get any iPhone-related stuff there. Just a fair warning before you add me. And iPhone Alley's Twitter, that's where the iPhone stuff is. And I occasionally Twitter from there about iPhone stuff. Twitter.com/iPhoneAlley. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
An iPod. A phone. You know, I'm thinking people aren't getting the gravity of the warning you just gave them about your Twitter account. I'm just saying.
No, I don't think they do either. I think they're going to go check it out. Even I think they're more people who haven't, you know, wouldn't otherwise check it out are going to check it out because of that.
You know what it's like? It's like when you go driving past a bad wreck on the road and you slow down and you look because you never know what you're really going to see. And it might be something that shocks and scars you for life, but you can't help but look. That's your Twitter account.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No.
Yeah. But it was cool because I did get to reconnect with friends that I hadn't seen for 20 years.
I'm back, by the way. I'm just enjoying your conversation.
Hello.
Did everything come out okay?
Yeah.
No burning or anything?
No, not yet.
That's good. So the ointment is working.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck.
But yeah, I've never gotten so much feedback from a single episode ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it like predominantly good, or
it was all
people
good.
Going, what the fuck?
it was all, actually all of it was both. It was good, and they were also kind of confused. They recognized the amount of potential the content has. They're still just, you know, making graphs though and trying to figure it all out.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. It's like the level of information that was dumped on these people was beyond what most of them get in a month.
At least from this podcast. We usually just talk about Nightshade.
True. Yeah. Made on a Mac, motherfucker.